In recent years, lawsuits against individuals downloading copyrighted material have become rare, largely due to backlash against the deeply unpopular legal tactics of the Recording Industry Association of America. The RIAA's Sue the Pants Off of College Kids campaign was suspended in 2008, traded for a strategy of pursuing software companies such as LimeWire that create programs enabling piracy. But this year, the lone downloader is in the crosshairs once again. A consortium of enterprising intellectual property lawyers, styling themselves the U.S. Copyright Group, has sued more than 14,000 defendants. Not alleged downloaders of music, but alleged downloaders of movies. To give you some perspective, the U.S. Copyright Group has sued nearly as many individuals in 5 months as the RIAA did in 5 years. Nate Anderson of the blog Ars Technica says this new round of lawsuits isn't a means to curb piracy so much as one to monetize it.
That's right. They go to independent filmmakers and they tell them, we will go out, find people who are sharing your films, send them these settlement letters, demand that they pay us $1,500 to $2,500, and if they don't, we can take them to court. We will split all that money with you on a contingency basis. I think the thing that concerns some of the people I've talked to about this approach is that if you went to a lawyer to try to contest them, even if you were innocent, it would cost you more than if you just settled the money. So people have to make these sorts of decisions.
And guilty or innocent, I guess it feels like a shakedown.
Well, that's how many people feel. In the settlement letters that we have seen, the lawyers do promise that if they take these people to court, that they will go after the most damages possible, $150,000 per infringement. That was something that the recording industry was never willing to do. In the only two court cases that went all the way to trial, the RIAA would never set that sort of dollar figure on it and always left it up to the juries.
Now, it kind of reminds me of those TV commercials and subway posters trolling for plaintiffs on personal injury, asbestos cases, and so on. Is this kind of ambulance chasing?
It's clearly different from what the recording industry was trying to do. If you ever talk to the recording industry about their lawsuits, you'll know that they were insistent that it was about education, that they wanted people to understand that sharing this material violated U.S. copyrights. It was not about making money. And in fact, they have always said that their campaign, which was 5 years long and went after 18,000 people in the U.S., was a money loser. This appears to be very different from that.
So how does this law firm go about identifying potential culprits?
They have partnered with a firm called Gardelay. What they do is monitor BitTorrent downloads. They can see which internet protocol addresses are sharing parts of these files. And then these cases are filed, 2,000, 4,000, in some cases even 5,000 anonymous users at a time. And the lawyers ask the courts to help them turn these IP addresses into real people's names and addresses.
And the internet service providers have to comply?
If the subpoenas are valid, the ISPs would turn over the information of their subscriber who is using that address at that particular date and time. Time Warner Cable has been objecting to the subpoenas on the grounds that they're unduly burdensome, and they are trying to get the courts to either quash these subpoenas or cut them back radically.
Now, the lawyers are also running into another obstacle at a D.C. district court where a judge has asked them to explain under what basis they're suing 4,500 John Does at a time. If the lawyers are obliged to start suing people one at a time instead of en masse, are they going to be out of business?
Certainly it would put a tremendous cramp on what they're trying to do right now, because when you have to file separately, you have to pay a federal filing fee for each one of those cases. You have to file individual paperwork and respond separately to motions in every particular docket. They have already filed 14,000 cases against these anonymous defendants in 2010 alone.
Let's just say that the U.S. Copyright Group is permitted to continue business as usual. Maybe half of the money they recoup goes back to the producers of the film, who themselves have been victimized by piracy. Isn't this kind of just fine?
There's two real concerns with the approach. One is the amount of money involved here. I think it's debatable whether being hit out of the blue with a demand to pay $1,500 for maybe one film you downloaded, or you could face a $150,000 penalty, you know, it's really a proportional response to what happened. The other question is whether everyone is in fact guilty. And it's clear that that's not the case. So then the question is, how many people were innocent and how many of them just decided to settle rather than dig up a lawyer, pay several thousand dollars just to try to prove their innocence?
Because they say it may have happened at their IP address, but not while they were at the computer. They didn't download anything.
I've heard from some people who said they've gone around and interrogated every member of their household. Everyone has denied it. They can't find any evidence of these files on their home computers. And I think it points to the basic issue in all of these sorts of prosecutions, which is that an IP address does not identify a person, but a machine, usually somebody's router. That router can be sharing their internet connection with just about anyone, especially if it's hooked up to a wireless network. And it's very difficult to know if your son or a friend of your son or, you know, a visitor or the person next door in the apartment ever used that connection to do something illicit.
All right. Nate, thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
Nate Anderson is a senior editor for the blog Ars Technica.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.